That says accessory uses include offices, recreational health facilities, et cetera. So that really speaks to the issue. Now, when you look at Title 33-130, and Table 130-1 shows the detention facilities in the CX zone as conditional use review required. It does not say allowed, but special limitations, like some of the other uses are in that table, but it says that it has to be required. And that is what we are asking for today. It doesn't say if the detention facility is less than 40% of the office space or something, or 20% less. You know, we think the word required really hits the nail on the head. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Appreciate your testimony.
Next three are Thomas Noguchi, Krista Rodriguez, and Lenore Barkin. They will be followed by Hadley Corwin, Madeline Abrams, and Carmel Ungerland Abrams.
Welcome to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Would you like to begin?
Yeah, Leroy Barker. I'm sorry, my handwriting is terrible. I live in South Waterfront, and I'm speaking for myself. I read carefully several times the notice that was sent out by the city, and I think it's misleading and inaccurate. And why? Because this, a major component of this is a detention facility. They're going to take people there. They're going to be in federal custody and presumably adjudicated whether they should be in federal custody. But I think the public needs to know that that's one of the purposes of this. And I don't think you can sweep it under as an accessory. I think if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barker. Quack, quack.
My name is Krista Rodriguez. I am a Portland native and a Southwest Portland business owner, as well as the mother of a first grader at Southwest Charter School. We love our school. And we are both, he and I, at 6 years old, very concerned with the idea of being next door neighbors with the detention center. It does not feel comfortable to me. It does not feel safe. Our children are outside, in the environment, in the neighborhood, every single day. Our kids still get recess twice a day. We're outside taking hikes, writing poetry about trees. The kids are out and about. They're going to be walking around, and I'm afraid of what he might see. It makes me uncomfortable. I feel like this was put out there as an office, and now it's like, oh, by the way, there's going to be a little detention center on the side. For me, as a citizen, it feels like a bit of a bait and switch. And I feel like had this gone through the conditional use process, you would have received considerable feedback from every member of our family, our Southwest Charter School family.
Thank you, Ms. Rodriguez. Appreciate your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Tom Noguchi. I request the full 3 minutes to complete my statement. As a concerned resident of South Waterfront, I support the appeal of the South Portland Neighborhood Association. I do not believe that the Design Commission followed the city's code in looking at the definition of primary use. The code defines primary use as an activity or combination of activities of chief importance on the site. One of the main purposes of this structure for which the structure is intended. A site may have more than one primary use as provided for by the code. And I think some of the discussion that preceded myself in discussing the use says that the code is clear that you can have more than one primary use. Since the building is being leased by the GSA for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement unit, I mean, it is clear to me that based on the record as well as the statements here, that includes a detention facility. And if you look at table 130-1 in the planning guide, it basically says, as Jim pointed out, that conditional use is a required if you, in fact, meet the requirement, the definitions of having primary use as a detention facility, recognizing that the primary use can be more than one category. So acknowledging the purpose and the use of the building as a detention facility, I believe that the city should in fact have a conditional use review so that all of the residents and the public will have adequate opportunity to add all of their issues that are being brought up by this discussion within that context, and you can make a comprehensive decision as it applies to this facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Noguchi. Thank you all for your testimony.
Next three are Hadley Corwin, Madeline Abrams, and Carmel Unger-Leader Abrams. And they will be followed by Leonard Michon, Peter Fenner, and Fred Gans.
Hi, welcome. Glad you're here. Are you... What's your name?
My name is Hadley Corwin.
Hi.
And I am in fourth grade at Southwest Charter School. The children in my class, as well as my teacher Jody Swan and lots of others, are not happy with the idea of a federal detention center across the street from a public charter school. Not only would this cause distraction to learning, but there would also be cause of fear of having a jail-like structure near your playground. Please see reason in this statement. We fellow Southwest Charter School supporters feel concern in the destination of the detention center. We ask you to reconsider the impact on us students and kindly select a different destination for your for the detention center. Thank you.
Very well done. And we don't allow clapping in the chamber, but for you, we'll allow clapping. Good job. Hi, welcome.
Hi. My name is Madeline Abrams, and I'm a fifth grader, and I go to Southwest Charter School. I'm worried that something terrible might happen if the detention center moves in next door. Our school is looking to use the outdoor space as a playground. I want to feel safe while I'm playing. Thank you for listening.
And you, too, did a fantastic job.
Hi, my name is Carmel Unger-Leiter Abrams, and I'm here to voice my concerns. I could defer to Krista. She has a lot of good points that she made. But this is my reason. You know, she's here. I want her to be safe. I want to feel like I can drop my child off at school and not have to have any existing worries in the back of my head. Just knowing that there's the possibility of this building being next door makes me almost want to pull my daughter from a school that I love and cherish and have a sense of community with, because the building would be a deterrent for me to keep her in a place where she's really happy. So I hope that you can consider these things. And from a PR standpoint of a school, I think it would be a nightmare to get new families in if the next door neighbor is a detention facility. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony. Really appreciate it. Next three
are Leonard Michon, Peter Fenner, and Fred Gans. And they'll be followed by Lee Daly Smolin, Perry Walker, and Sabrina Stein.
Mr. Michon?
Yes.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you. Your Honor and Commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity to address you this afternoon. My name is Leonard Michon, and I live in South Waterfront. And I want to thank you, Mr. Mayor, for your words last week about opening of the construction of the pedestrian bridge. You indicated this will help the revitalization of South Waterfront, and I think you're right. My wife and I moved from the East Coast in 2010 after visiting Oregon the prior year and falling in love with the state and Portland in particular. We lived in Battery Park City in New York City, less than 1,000 feet from World Trade Center Tower 2. We were home at the time of the murderous attack on New York City. Battery Park City was a place very similar to South Waterfront, a large open area with few buildings. Public transportation could take you to all parts of the city and well beyond, but little existed there for many years. Then a huge office complex was built on part of the land, apartment buildings, condominiums followed, restaurants, grocery stores, a hotel, parks, public art, a pedestrian bridge, one of the premier high schools in the city, and a wonderful walking and biking esplanade along the Hudson River, which now extends almost the entire length of Manhattan. It is one of the destination neighborhoods in the city, the west coast of Manhattan. I can envision South Waterfront as such a vibrant neighborhood, but it needs all of those things I mentioned above. I applaud the city, county, regional governments for the planned enhancements to the streetcar and MAX that go into and through South Waterfront. The planned extension of Moody, the reconfiguration of Bancroft, the redirection of traffic coming from Hood Avenue, the planned expansion of the Willamette Greenway, and the proposed charter school will make the neighborhood much more welcoming. And I applaud OHSU for their planned life sciences building. The southern portal into South Waterfront at Bancroft is dangerous as a result of traffic coming off of Hood Avenue. Fix the road first. In order to reach the extended greenway from the neighborhood south beyond Bancroft, everyone must pass beside the 4310 McAdam building. Extend the greenway first. The location of the proposed charter school is less than 100 feet from the property line of 4310 McAdam building. Let's think of the kids first. The vault of 4310 McAdam will be the holding cell, jail, for the prisoners. The 100-plus staff at 4310 McAdam will have 100-plus federal vehicles available. Those vehicles will not sit there as a decoration. They will be used by that staff, meaning that the majority of the staff will not be holding office at that location for the major part of the day. This is not an office. It is a jail. Let's follow the city rules and regulations regarding land use first. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi.
Hi. My name is Fred Gans. I also am a resident at South Waterfront. I'm also an architect, have practiced architecture for over 40 years. I have personally been involved in projects ranging in size from $10 million to $20 billion in size, and really have seen an awful lot by way of planning or not planning and the consequences of exactly those two situations. I'm from Los Angeles, California, was born and raised there. No booze in the audience, thank you. But moved here because I fell in love with Portland. My wife and I fell in love with Portland some years ago and finally escaped from Los Angeles. It should be noted maybe that one of the reasons we came to Portland is because of the environment, because of the rhetoric of sustainability, because of the green, because of the seasons, and really the sensitivity that we thought that Portland and Oregon have to human nature and the human condition, if you will. In the context of doing architecture in not just Los Angeles, not just in the United States, all over the world, I can tell you that I have never, ever seen a lack of requirements like we have seen with this project. Typically, one even in places that I practice in Micronesia or Saudi Arabia or Iran or Kuwait or Korea, there is always a process first to examine the practicality, the rationale for designing a building on a specific site. What will the impact be? Is it through an impact report or a statement and so forth? None of that was available or done in this process. So we jumped immediately to a design review. The design review, I attended that session. In fact, I spoke at the design review hearing. But it was clear that none of the background was presented in terms of how the site was selected. It was already fait accompli. It was inappropriate as far as I'm concerned, and I'm shocked and amazed that Portland would put up with such a process. We talk an awful lot about sustainability. We talk an awful lot about green, but we have to really look at the big picture as well. And through that big picture comes the environmental impact of what a project like this will do to not only the South Waterfront, frankly, but to Oregon. Somebody already testified to the notion about the money that this city has already put into the South Waterfront in excess of $100 million. That's an awful lot of money. The South Waterfront is a baby and it's in its infancy as a city. It's being watched by not only people in Portland and people in Oregon, but by people all around the country, because there's so few examples where a brand new city gets to emerge from a industrial site. It was a city that is close to downtown, its proximity. It's on the banks of the Willamette, access to public transportation, to bus, streetcar. Certainly the notion of mixed use, residential in character and commercial, is all part of the ingredients. We've heard a little bit more about that today. But now to introduce a jail at the gateway of the South Waterfront, it makes absolutely no sense. You don't have to be an architect or a planner to understand there's something clearly wrong with this notion. So as a three-year-old city, and remember, it's in the infancy, it takes years. Look what we experienced in downtown with the Pearl. It took really 10 or 15 years until it really came into its own. We are at a very fragile place in our history at the moment with the South Waterfront. And so anything, and of course coming online in 2007 didn't help anything at all. So now with the potential impact of a jail, and I'm calling it a jail because that's what I really believe this is, could clearly damage severely and forever the notion of a South Waterfront.
And I'm sorry, I need you to wrap up.
Okay. My biggest concern is the limit that the GSA personally has on a 300-foot distance to a school. We're about 60 feet from a school, and there are two other schools on the South Waterfront. And as somebody said, there are kids on these streets every day now. You see them holding hands, walking through the streets, walking through the South Waterfront. This is not what we expect the kids to see and for their environment. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir?
I'm Peter Fenner, and also from the...
Mr. Fenner, could you get a little closer to the mic?
Oh.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. That's thought I was just talking to you.
It's a whole world watching, all four of them on TV.
Forget about the audience. Hold your applause. So I do live in South Waterfront, have lived there since the very beginning in the Merriweather, and now I live in the Mirabella and still own a place in the Merriweather for obvious reasons. None of which I enjoy. This is a great neighborhood, and everybody has pretty well covered that. From a standpoint of the conditional use, it's pretty clear that nobody really used common sense here when they went through their argument. otherwise, we would have seen more discussion about the school, which was casually mentioned. Never did I see anything about the affordable housing. That's right across the street, diagonally from the jail. There's no parking for the employees, so we've now, which is good and bad. It's good in the long run because eventually the employee base will turn over and they'll all be people who probably live in the neighborhood, but right now they don't, so that's a bit of a problem. So my issues are I don't see the possibility of a school coexisting with a jail. I've never seen that any place, and I've lived in maybe 8 or 10 states in the United States and have 3 children who've all grown up and never had to go past the jail to get to school. So a simple example of the use argument is, suppose in Oregon decided to set up an office for the purpose of processing people on death row, and in the basement, they had an electric chair and a gas chamber and a lethal injection area. what would the use be if there were 95% of the space was offices for people and they didn't even bring the criminals in until they were going to take care of them? It's pretty obvious that this was intended as a detention facility, and I don't see how that ever got to the point that it has. My concern here also, besides the school, is the neighborhood mix. Right now, it started out as some older people living in some of the first units that are built down there, which are pretty expensive, and it's migrated, especially as prices have come down, to many, many, many young professional people working at OHSU, working at other places, riding their bikes to work, riding the tram up to OHSU. And they're starting to have babies, and they're starting to be children. There's a Montessori school that took a long time to get there, but now it's there. The next obvious step for these people would be go to this other school. We don't want to have to build a school at taxpayers' expense another school. Let's take what we have already.
So I need you to wrap up.
Okay. I'll stop. I think everybody's done a great job, and I certainly appreciate the attention that the mayor and the commissioners have had paid here to this hearing. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony today.
Next three are Lee Daly-Smolin, Perry Walker, and Sabrina Stein.
So while folks are coming up, and before you call the next three, I've been pretty lenient in terms of the kind of testimony allowed. This is a quasi-judicial hearing, which means we are governed by state laws and local ordinances that are intended to implement those laws. So if you could speak to the criteria under which we have to make a decision, that is most consistent with what's required of us on state law. And a number of items that have been raised, however worthy, are not part of the decision-making criteria that we are required to follow. So I know this is complicated stuff. I didn't write the state law, but I'm required to help facilitate us following it. Do we have someone else to testify?
The last two who signed up next will be Gordon Carone and Susan, I believe the last name is Waylena.
Defer. Thank you.
I was going to say the same thing, actually. The three gentlemen that were here prior, I think, encompassed everything I'd like to say.
Could you state your name for the record?
Sure. It's Lee Daly-Smolin.
Thank you.
You're very generous. Thank you.
Thank you. I essentially defer as well. My name is Perry Walker. Except for, it seems to me there's a lot of confusion as to what is being proposed and what is going to happen. I would suggest the council look at what happened at the Coma Northwest Detention Center. That's the closest to us. It's run by ICE. It's a detention center. It's on a website. It shows truly it is a prison, a jail, with all the facilities and all the accoutrements that go with holding people for whatever the reasons. And it might be helpful to look the process they went through and the written record, what was proposed and what did they come up with and how is it being used and is it all consistent? I think that's what people are concerned about. Is it what it says it's going to be? We just hate to see a bait and switch program. This is too important of an issue for that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Hi, welcome.
My name is Gordon Caron. I also live in the neighborhood, and thank you for the opportunity of talking to the commissioners and the mayor. Mr. Mayor, could you just define what you meant by what issues we should not be talking about because you're limited by what you have to do?
I tell you what.
Because I've got a long list of things which I would plan to present. I don't want to waste your time.
I'm going to let you say whatever you want for 3 minutes.
I'll be much briefer than that. Okay.
But the short answer is contained in the PowerPoint of the staff presentation. Those items, and she went through those, that is what we are limited. Our decision-making is limited to considering that criteria in those items.
You mean the criteria that we're just talking about is usage, the use of the building?
And the design.
Pardon?
I think there are basically two things you can talk about. One is the nature of the use. The other is whether or not the design commission was correct in determining that the proposed use complies with the design review criteria that are laid out in its decision.
Thank you. Okay. So I'll confine myself just to use and the design criteria that appertain to that. The original application for this work was office with accessory uses, including a processing area for people awaiting a hearing before an administrative officer. That's a euphemistic description of a detention facility. And as has been mentioned before, in Title 33 has a table 130-1, commercial zone primary uses, and for the zoning, which applies here, CX, running all the way down to detention facilities, it says CU, conditional use review required. I would suggest that you embark on arranging a conditional use hearing. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I really appreciate it. Does anyone else wish to testify in support of the appeal that did not get an opportunity to sign up? All right, we'll now... Oh, yes, sir. Please come forward. I moved too quick. Thanks for your patience.
Yes, my name is Millage Walker. I'm a retired college professor. And one of the observations that I would like to make, I don't want to repeat the cogent arguments that have been already brought up, but as you walk around the streets of the South Waterfront, one of the things that confronts you is the number of vacant commercial establishments. And my feeling is that with a facility like this, the attraction of business, small-scale business that can fill these various vacancies, is not going to be strong enough to make it possible.
Thank you. I appreciate the passion in which that was given, and it is an example of a criteria that we cannot use for our decision-making process. All right, we will now get to the opponent of the appeal. Principal opponent? Is the principal opponent here?
Be the applicant here.
Oh, I'm sorry, the applicant here. The principal applicant. Sorry, and got my word wrong. Welcome to the City Council chambers. Glad you're here. Have you all been here before?
Yes.
Okay. Then you know it's old hat. If you could just, each of you, please introduce yourselves and who you represent.
My name is John Junkin. I'm a lawyer with Garvey Schubert Baer, representing the applicant.
Howard Karsman. I'm an attorney representing the applicant as well.
My name is Augustine Enriquez V. I'm with GBD Architects, and I was the design lead on the project.
Who would like to begin?
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thought I would take just a moment to introduce some of the members of the owner's team and those who are interested in the project, primarily so that council can see the resources that are available to answer questions. There's certainly been a good deal said, and here's an opportunity to find out really what is the nature of this facility. So we have Stu Lindquist and Rod Grinberg, and members of the applicant team.
Where are they?
Stu over there.
Who?
We have Keith Skilly from GBD, the architect that has been leading the process, the design review and land use process. Pat Prendergast is here. Pat has been assisting the owner, and he's also a supporter and a resident of the South Waterfront.
Where's Pat? Mr. Prendergast, welcome.
From the federal government, we have Scott Mattson from the General Services Administration. Scott has signed up to provide 3 minutes of testimony. And then James Grunewald, who is with ICE. And he is here and available to answer questions.
Hi. Welcome.
We have a good deal of ground to cover, and I would like my co-counsel, John Junkin, to address the use issue, and of course we're all available to answer questions as well.
Mr. Junkin.
Augustine's available if you have any questions about the design, but from what I've heard, it sounds like most of the questions and concerns relate to the permitted use question. So let's have some questions on design. I'll start with that on the permitted use. First of all, I appreciate the accommodation that we, by their council this afternoon, by allowing us additional time, all parties additional time to submit more evidence into the record on this issue of committed or permitted use. As was stated by your staff, This issue was raised below by the in the Design Commission, but not really addressed because it wasn't within their authority. Everybody apparently recognized that and pushed it up to the chain of command, so to speak, and now it's before you. When we proposed this additional time, we also said we'd agree to an extension of the 120 days, obviously, to accommodate it. My letter, actually, as pointed out by Catherine Beaumont to me a short while ago, says we'd extend the 120 days to February 23rd. That would be the day to make the decision, so we're willing to extend to February 24th, just to make sure we got plenty of time. One of the speakers just before us, I think, kind of summed up a lot of the issues here, and that is there's a lot of confusion. And that's one of the reasons, that is the reason, I think, we've asked for additional opportunity for everybody to submit evidence and information so people can really understand, and you can understand and make an informed decision that and confirm what the staff has said, that this is a permitted use, an office use with an accessory use for holding cells that would be used in a very minor amount in scale and in time in this facility. This application comes to you to be considered as an office, and as defined by your code, offices include government offices. And I have a written presentation we'll give to staff at the conclusion of this, but what we'll point out to you, and some of it is new information now that the record's been opened, but that the amount of space within this office building is as to be committed to or to be utilized for the holding facilities is very minor compared to the overall area of the office or the buildings. And that's important because staff has pointed out to you, as they did their analysis, what do you determine as primary and what do you determine as accessory? And they went through that analysis, and they went through several criteria. My letter is signed by myself, by the way, and Ed Sullivan of our office. I'm sure you know Mr. Sullivan. It goes through the same analysis that the staff did as far as what's primary, what's accessory. And it also discusses, well, let's look at what else it could be if it's not office. For example, we, in our letter and in your staff's analysis, took a look at the issue, is this a detention facility? And I think Commissioner Fish asked some questions. Why isn't this a detention facility? There are a lot of things in your code that have leave some ambiguity. But when it comes to detention facility, you're pretty specific as to what's a detention facility. And just quite candidly, this is not a detention facility. A detention facility, as you define in your code, is one that requires 24-hour supervision, that has incarcerated people who have been judicially incarcerated. What the people that come through this facility are people who have been picked up by ICE, brought to the facility for processing. They may have been incarcerated at one point in time, but they're not incarcerated at the time that they're picked up by ICE. They may be released from a county jail or the state prison, but they're released from incarceration. At the moment they're released from incarceration, they're then picked up administratively by ICE, brought to this facility, and they're processed through. And the processing, as you can imagine, being in the public sector, requires a lot of paperwork. There's things that have to be done. There's pictures to be taken, fingerprints to be made, a number of things that have to be done as you process somebody through, a lot of bureaucratic work. The individual has to stay there during that processing, and these facilities we're talking about, which have become the bone of contention, if you will, are those rooms in which those people would be confined while they're being processed. They're not going to be held overnight. As a matter of fact, there is a bus, as I understand it, will provide you with further information on this, that leaves every day, that will remove them from the property to take them to a detention facility. As a matter of fact, the detention facility that the previous speaker spoke of in Tacoma, that is a detention facility, clear distinction from what we're talking about here.
What can I interrupt?
Certainly.
Make sure you have plenty of time as well, is what's their legal status then? They're suspected of being illegal or not having the proper paperwork at that point?
Yeah. Well, we have people from ICE here who I probably can respond to that question better than I can, Mayor Adams. But I can tell you this much. They're not incarcerated in the sense that they have been released. If they were incarcerated, they'd still be in prison or they'd still be in the county jail. But they've been released from incarceration, processed out of one of that facility, wherever they've been imprisoned. And at that point, they're picked up by ICE administratively, is my understanding. But I'll defer to ICE to provide better explanation of that. But they're not, as pointed out in the record in an opinion that Mr. Carsman provided early on, They're not judicially incarcerated. There's no, ICE is part of the executive branch, as you're well aware. It's not part of the judicial branch. The ICE officers are not peace officers under the definition the city uses. It's an administrative process. They have to go someplace to be papered and processed through, and it's an office building where they take them to. We should also point out this is not a new function for ICE, and it's not a new function to be done in the city of Portland. It's been done for, as I understand, approximately 30 years, back to the 70s, at 511 Broadway, downtown Portland, as I understand it, a CX zone. So it's the same thing. And I think you'll hear...
Just to be clear, though, the 511 Broadway building is a federal building. So it's, yes, it was never subject to our zoning code as to what the intended use was on that site.
That's my understanding, too, Commissioner. And I wasn't intending to imply that was... I'm just saying the use has been in downtown Portland for decades.
But if I could, just because I think you're getting to the heart of it, you said a moment ago that there was more clarity in terms of the definition of a detention facility than the other. And I just want to put you to your proof on that for a second, because I find a lack of clarity under all three, but I'd like to be persuaded that there's clarity here. Under characteristics, it says detention facilities includes. Now, do you see includes as a phrase of limitation or a phrase of illustration?
Well, you're putting me on the point there, aren't you? I would think that it's your commission's ability to interpret that, and that it would be plausible for you to interpret that it's a phrase of illustration.
Illustration. And I'd like to, since I posed the question to Kara in her excellent presentation, I'll give you the same courtesy. Under the example section, it includes a probation center. How do you square a probation center with what you said earlier about a judicially supervised facility that operates 24 hours a day?
Well, I personally am not familiar with all the functions that happen within a probation center, and we will soon be looking into that over the next week.
I would just say that's, for me at least, that would be an area where I would appreciate some guidance, because as Kara pointed out, these are not terms that are defined in our code. And our job is to bring a common sense interpretation, yeah. So we'll be looking for some guidance on that.
Yeah, and I've not practiced in the area of criminal law, but I believe when you're on probation, you're still within the judicial custody, so to speak. You've been released, but you're still within the judicial restraints as far as they can revoke and bring you back. I think that is a significant difference, being an incarcerated person who is on probation, as opposed to the situation where we're dealing with the undocumented worker who is not incarcerated.
Okay,
but
thank you.
But I wrote down those questions, Commissioner Fish, and we'll certainly address those in our.
I hope my questions, Mayor, don't count against their time.
No. She stopped the clock.
As we went through the analysis, we came to the same conclusion, obviously, as your staff did. We think they did a very thorough analysis. So they took a look at this as a detention facility, and I do believe the detention facility does have more specific language as far as the description where you might find other language in your code. The 24-hour supervision, what the intent is, that's not found here. They took a look at whether this is a basic utility, and we addressed that in our letter, and there it's similar to a basic utility, which would also be permitted, but we have to concede it's not a basic utility. It's analogous to a basic utility like a police station would be, but it's not. It's because it's obviously not a city of Portland, but it's probably a very analogous situation to a basic utility, which would be allowed within the CX zone. Really comes down to what is the primary purpose. It is an office building of approximately 65,000 square feet, all but a little over 3,000 square feet is being used for office and accessories that you normally see with an office. There's a little over 3,000, about 3,700 square feet that's being used for these places to locate people as they're processed through for a period of time, never to exceed 12 hours a day. In fact, I think you'll hear testimony and further evidence that probably just a matter of just a few hours a day as they're processed through. So it's an accessory. We went through the same analysis as looking at the criteria.
Council, before you get to the criteria, because you're being very helpful to us, don't we first start with the definition of accessory uses that's in the code before we go to the criteria?
Well, that's the criteria I'm talking about.
What's in the code?
Right.
And if you start there, it defines accessory uses as things like cafeterias, health facilities, parking, or other amenities primarily for the use of employees. And so help us understand how that definition squares with the idea of a holding cell within this context.
Well, I would say, first of all, that as we discussed a moment ago with the word include and detention, is that illustrative or specific? And I think this is illustrative, the definition you're looking at. These are examples of what accessory could be. They're not saying that it can only be this, but these are all illustrative of what they can be. The holding cells we're talking about here are, and this is one of the criteria for accessory uses, are integral, necessary part of the function of the office work. You can't, and that's one of the criteria. It can't function independently. One of the criteria for accessory is it cannot operate independently from the primary use. The only reason it's there is because of the primary use. They need to have the individual there present as they process them through. If they weren't processing them through, the individual would not be there. They would be in jail, and this is not a jail. It's for a limited purpose.
So is the entire 61,000 square feet related to the processing of the people in the 3,000 square feet, or are there other office uses?
There are, my understanding, and you can have asked that question of the federal people too, but my understanding there are a number of administrative offices for investigative services, that sort of thing, as well
the
as...
offices could exist without the detention, the processing facility. The processing facility couldn't exist without the offices.
Those offices related to, and I don't have the exact number, those offices related to the processing for the ICE-EROS process can only be there if those holding facilities are there, because they have to be where the holding facilities are. That makes sense. But there are other functions within the office, within the building, rather, that are related to other governmental services that are not necessarily related to processing people through.
So some of the office functions could, I mean, I went through the immigration center down on opposite the post office and to do my immigrate, you know, the training, the citizenship classes, et cetera. Never saw the holding facilities or was part of that. So there's a part of the office use that's not at all related to.
Yes, I think that's probably correct.
Thank you.
But because the primary use is office, and is this not offices related to, it's all government offices, but it's not just offices related to the ICE work that requires the holding facilities. There are government offices related to a whole function of other things.
So there may in fact be two primary uses. There's the holding, which wouldn't exist, or the...
No, I would disagree. There's only one primary use, and that's the office. And whether the office is being used for processing through individuals through ICE, or whether it's being used for investigative offices, cubicles for investigators, or for administrative work, it's all office.
Counsel, would your position change if the holding cells and the offices were on different lots? Different lots. Let's say that the government chose to rehab the one building for the holding center and put their offices across the street and develop another lot. So they weren't physically connected, but they were adjacent. Would your argument about an accessory use change?
Well, that's probably, it may, because one of the considerations that you have listed when looking at what's an accessory use is building and site arrangement. So I suppose if you're saying if they were to locate a holding facility 10 blocks down the street and then have their offices, you know, 10 blocks away, is the holding facility now the primary use for that site? It may be. But in our case, they're not. They're integral. They're in the same building. It's a small scope of the building physically. It's an important part of the actual work being done by ICE. But it clearly is. The primary is office accessory, and we, like I said, we've gone through the same analysis because that's what your code directs us to. What is this thing? It is a primary office building, and with a number of accessory uses. Also has a lunchroom, has a gym, and it just so happens because of the nature of the work of the people who work there, you have to have certain people stay while they are processed through, and there are these rooms for holding facilities. The misconception I've heard, and I can appreciate the concern of the citizens, that this is a jail. I think perhaps, hopefully, some people made up their mind, but hopefully as we educate you and provide you with more information, and the citizens will also understand that what this really is. This is an office building, and it's an important office building. It's important to the city. I mean, it maintains 150 workers in the downtown area, and it's a very important to maintain this. Unless there are some other questions on design or if there's any particular...
I do.
Okay.
So do individuals that are... Is it possible to... I'm trying to get as accurate a sense as possible of the type of office use. And therefore, my question is it possible for clients to arrive and be released from this facility?
It's, again, ask of GSA, but it's my understanding, no, that the people are brought to this facility from elsewhere. They're there for a few hours, perhaps. They're processed out.
I think the gentleman from ICE wants to weigh in here.
But if I'm wrong, ICE knows the answer to that.
I mean, there are circumstances where individuals would come into the facility and be released. Absolutely. But
so could you... I'm sorry, you're talking long enough. Can you make your way to a microphone and introduce yourself?
My name is James Gromwald. I'm the Enforcement Removal Operations Project Manager for this project. My other position is I'm the Contract Reviewing Officer at the Northwest Detention Center in Tacoma, Washington. So I know a little bit about detention and what we do and how we do it. Now, in this office here in Oregon, we categorize it basically as a processing center. Those individuals are in transit. Generally speaking, the vast majority of those individuals are in transit from they could be from transit from the local jails in the state of Oregon, your state prison facilities in the state of Oregon. They feed into our process through the criminal alien program, where when he was talking about basically they may be released from that detention, that facility, that prison, that jail, whatever that facility, into our custody via a detainer that's been placed on them by the federal government. They're processed through through the Portland office, which is now at 511 building in the Pearl District, and they are... brought to the Tacoma Northwest Detention Center for their adjudication and confinement.
So is it possible that, so would you have walk-up clients?
There's a certain portion of the mission that's performed at that facility where individuals that are awaiting the adjudications of their cases, where they would check in at that facility. Yeah, that is a portion of the mission completed there.
And are those individuals solely, those potential clients or clients solely limited to those that were previously involved in the criminal, were they convicted of a crime on their way out of institutions?
I mean, there could be a number of reasons why they might be in the process of, what we would call a deferred detention program, where they would check in. One of those reasons may be that they're in some sort of a flux in terms of their status here in the United States.
So when Commissioner Fritz took citizenship
classes,
will there be citizenship classes there?
Now, citizenship classes would not be there. At one point, at this point, after Homeland Security came into being, what was formerly known as INS was split apart into separate agencies, and one of those agencies is the Citizenship and Immigration Services.
Okay.
And I believe they're in the process of relocating to another building in Portland right now.
That's
I think they're going to take occupancy in June.
That's in the Pearl, I think.
I think it is, too.
Okay, so my other question is, some customers, clients might arrive and be released from that building. Others would arrive and take a bus to Tacoma.
The vast majority would, right.
And then some additional might be in the process of back and forth to need to get back to the building for one reason or another.
Right.
Okay. And I have questions about design, but before we go to design, are there other questions?
I have questions on design too, but about the facility. Mm-hmm. Are there currently holding cells in the facility opposite the post office?
There are, yes.
And have we ever had a problem in terms of people being of danger to citizens nearby?
I have no personal knowledge of that, no.
And
if I could just, Emerson Charter School is nearby. Has there ever been a problem related to the school and the operations of the existing facility?
No. And I guess one of the other things I should probably impart on this is I've worked on a number of these projects within the state of Washington, and I was formerly the INS Assistant District Director for Administration and was responsible for all the facilities that we developed under INS. And, for instance, the Seattle Field Office, which is also a processing center, which does house Citizenship and Immigration Services also in that building, and all of the enforcement, or at least the immigration or the enforcement removal operations are also housed there. We took great pains to design that building in a fashion that people that are there to receive a benefit are basically don't even know the enforcement operations are happening there. Basically, this is not that we have any hidden agenda, or we try to be open and transparent in terms of what we're doing in enforcing the law. But primarily, those things are done out of the eyes of the public, generally speaking, in a safe and humane manner. That's how we design those facilities for that specific reason. So that's one of the reasons that they've actually gone away from the co-location of CIS and ERO. In one standpoint, was the general perception of that you couldn't have people receiving benefits and enforcement in one operation, although it's been done very successfully and continues to be done very successfully in Tukwila, Washington. So
I have one more question on the functioning of
sure.
your program, and that is if somebody is released from a secure facility, either Multnomah County, the Oregon State Hospital, whatever, they come to this processing center, mm-hmm. do their families or their lawyers have access to them at the processing center?
They actually do. In the design of the processing center, there are visitation areas for them to meet with their clients, attorneys to meet with their clients, or family members to meet with them. And that's an integral part and requirement within those designs that right off the processing area we have. I think in this particular building we have an ADA accessible visitation room and then three others. So there's a total of four visitation rooms that are available there for that purpose.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So Mr. Grunwald,
uh-huh.
is that right?
Grunwald? That's correct. Thank you.
The appellant has said that the GSA has a regulation requiring a 300-foot separation from a federal facility such as you're proposing in a school. Can you address that?
That would probably be something that's better addressed by GSA, since they really are the federal government's leasing authority and they handle those things, and that's one of their regulations.
We have somebody here who can
Okay. If I could get that done.
Before we lose Mr. Grunwald, may we just conclude mm-hmm. while you're here, sir?
Sure.
None of us are professionally involved in the whole immigration system, so
sure.
you're using terms which, frankly, to me, don't mean a lot, including things like adjudication. Mm-hmm. So I want to just break it down. The adjudication that you're referring to, or the determination by a hearing officer, is as to the question of whether someone should be deported from our country. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And a basis for a deportation could include conviction of a certain crime while here under some lawful status, correct?
It could, yes. So
someone that is given permission to come here under a green card or something and then commits a certain kind of felony could be subject to deportation.
That's correct.
And that part is done civilly. When we talk about a civil proceeding, separate and apart from whether someone has engaged in a criminal violation while they're here, the civil proceeding is the judgment as to whether they can be deported, correct?
Well, I suppose that's pretty close to accurate. Yeah.
So in terms of the people who would be processed at this site, mm-hmm. can you tell us in ballpark figures what percentage of those people would be people who have been convicted of a crime?
Well, actually, the vast majority of the people that would stream through this processing center, transit through this processing center, would be, as a result of detainers placed on them, leaving Oregon jails, leaving Oregon prison facilities. So, you know, a lot of those individuals would be convicted of some sort of crime or to be detained there. Not necessarily all of them, but some of them, yes.
And you know, I walk by the Multnomah County Courthouse pretty regularly, and when they bring the Multnomah County Sheriff brings his truck in, they put about 10 deputies on the street.
Right.
They shut down the street.
Right.
Typically, the people they're transporting in are people who have simply been charged with a crime, not convicted of a crime. They're going to court. So what precautions do you take at this facility to address the fact that the majority of the people who are being processed there are convicted of a crime and are being transferred from a jail or penitentiary for processing?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well,
are you talking about how the individuals transit into the facility and leave the facility, and at what and how that occurs in terms of their custody while they're there?
Yeah, maybe it's too
the
open-ended.
Safeguards, or
but I guess the point I'm trying to get at is the majority of the people who are being processed at this site are already involved in the criminal justice system and potentially are serving jail sentences in jail in other secure facilities, correct?
Well, a number of them could have been served time in state prisons, or they could just be individuals that were picked up on some sort of charge by your local police departments. You know, those individuals were determined to be foreign-born, and right. a detainer was placed on them.
And okay. and will there be people processed there who still have time left to serve on their sentence?
I mean on their federal sentence?
Federal
or their
or
state sentence or whatever?
Whatever their sentence is.
Generally, I would say there is a program out there that does that, but Oregon doesn't participate in that program with the federal government.
So
the answer would be those people have served their time, okay. and then once they're released from that facility, there's a detainer that's been placed, a law enforcement detainer, that's been placed against that individual. And that individual, once they've completed their time or they're being released from that individual facility, whether it be a jail or whatever that institution might be, they flow into our custody.
Okay. Thank you. That's very helpful.
Can I just ask a slight variant? So if somebody has served a sentence in, we'll say, Idaho,
okay.
and they're facing charges also in Oregon, after they've served the Idaho sentence, would they be transported directly to a correctional facility in Oregon, or could they go through this detention?
I couldn't answer that question since it doesn't really apply to what we do. I can only answer it from the standpoint of if there was a detainer, an ICE detainer placed on that individual, what might happen with them. From state to state, I can't really answer that question because it's not something that involves us.
Well, could you have a detainer on somebody who's served a sentence, completed a sentence in Idaho, but also
our particular office wouldn't, since we only have responsibility for Alaska, Washington, and Oregon. But the Salt Lake City office.
We'll say Washington.
Salt Lake City could, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had an individual who had served time for shoplifting, or, you know, and individuals being released,
and they were facing charges in Oregon.
Right.
Also for a similar crime.
So. Right.
Yeah.
once they're released from your institutions, we would place a detainer on them prior to them being released.
Yes. Would they come through this facility prior to
going to
being arraigned and facing the criminal charges?
Yeah, basically I guess the integral piece of that and the distinction between the processing center here in Oregon and how we function at 511 building is that those people are in transit and processed to Northwest Detention